This is part 8 of John Plowman's Pictures by Charles Haddon Spurgeon, the follow-up to John Plowman's talk. And the first chapter this episode is entitled Great Cry and Little Wool, as the man said who clipped the sow. And here's a picture of a farmyard, a pig pen, and there's an enormous pig sitting on the ground. And the farmer has his shears and he's trying to shear the pig. And there are three men, one with a whip, looking over the fence. And they're chortling away at this insane thing that they're witnessing. Our friend Hodge does not seem to be making much of an out at shearing. It will take him all his time to get wool enough for a blanket, and his neighbours are telling him so. But he does not heed them, for a man never listens to reason when he has made up his mind to act unreasonably. Hodge gets plenty of music of a sort. Huller's system is nothing to it, and even Nebuchadnezzar's flutes, harps, sackbuts, and dulcimers could not make more din. He gets cry enough to stock a Babylon of babies, but not enough wool to stop his ears with. Now, is not this very like the world in its notions of pleasure? There is noise enough, laughter and shouting and boasting, but where is the comfort which can warm the heart and give peace to the spirit? Generally, there's plenty of smoke and very little fire in what is called pleasure. It promises a nag and gives an egg. Gaiety is a sort of flash in the pan at a 5th of November, squib, all fizz and bang and done for. The devil's meal is all bran, and the world's wine turns to vinegar. It is always making a great noise over nutshells. Thousands have had to weep over their blunder in looking for their heaven on earth, but they follow each other like sheep through a gap, not a bit the wiser for the experience of generations. It seems that every man must have a clip at his own particular pig, and cannot be made to believe that, like all the rest, it will yield him nothing but bristles. Men are not all of one mind as to what is best for them. They no more agree than the clocks in our village, but they all hang together in following after vanity, for to the core of their hearts they are vain. One shears the publican's hog, which is so fond of the swill tub, and he reckons upon bringing home a wonderful lot of wool. But everybody knows that he who goes to the wool pack for wool will come home shorn. The blue boar is an uncommonly ugly animal to shear. He's talking about pubs. And so is the red lion. Better shear off as fast as you can. It will be sheer folly to stop. You may loaf about the tap of the half moon till you get the full moon in your noddle and need a keeper. It is the place for men whose wits go wool gathering, but wool there is none. Another is covetous and hopes to escape misery by being a miser. His greedy mind can no more be filled than a lawyer's purse. He never has enough, and so he never has a feast. He makes money with his teeth by keeping them idle. That is a very lean hog to clip at. For poverty wants some things, luxury many things, but covetousness wants all things. If we could hoard up all the money in the world, what would it be to us at last? Today at good cheer, tomorrow at the beer, in the midst of life we are in death. Some, like old Mrs. Toogood, go in for self-righteousness, and their own mouths dub them saints. They are the pink of perfection, the cream of creation, the gems of their generation, and yet a sensible man would not live in the same house with them for all the money you could count. They are saints abroad, but ask their maids what they are at home. Great cry and little wool is common enough in religion. You will find that those who crack themselves up are generally cracked, and those who despise their neighbours come to be despised themselves. Many try wickedness and run into bad company, and rake the kennels of vice. I warrant you, they may shear the whole stile full of filthy creatures and never find a morsel of wool on the whole lot of them. Loose characters, silly amusements, gambling, wantonness and such like are swine that none but a fool will try his shears upon. I don't deny that there's plenty of swinish music. Whoever expected that there would be silence in a piggery? But then noise cannot fill the heart, nor laughter lighten the soul. John Plowman has tried for himself, and he knows by experience that all the world is nothing but a hog that is not worth the shearing. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. But yet there is wool to be had, there are real joys to be got for the asking, if we ask aright. Below, all things deceive us, but above us there is a true friend. Wherefore do you spend your money for that which is not bread, and your labour for that which satisfieth not? This is John Plowman's verdict, which he wishes all his readers to take note of. Faith in Jesus Christ will give sweetest pleasures while we live. Faith in Jesus must supply solid comfort when we die. Amen. The second chapter of this episode is, You may bend the sapling, but not the tree. So here's a picture of two men, and there is a picture of a very solid tree, about 2 feet in diameter, I would say, and obviously quite an old tree, in an orchard, I think, with a barn or something behind it, and a fence. And the tree has a large pole tied to it. The tree is much, much thicker and heftier than the pole, as though the pole was trying to keep the tree upright, but it's hardly necessary. And there's a young man or boy dressed in farming gear who's going up a ladder to tie this pole to the tree. So the tree is obviously going to support the pole very well. And there is an older man in farming gear with a hat on and a walking stick. Perhaps he's the father or grandfather of the boy up the ladder. And he's giving directions, telling him, tie it there, son. It'll work. Ladder and pole and cord will be of no use to straighten the bent tree. It should have been looked after much earlier. Train trees when they are saplings, and young lads before the down comes on their chins. If you want a bullfinch to pipe, whistle to him while he is young. He will scarcely catch the tune after he has learnt the wild bird's note. Begin early to teach, for children begin early to sin. Catch them young, and you may hope to keep them. Ere your boy has reached 7, teach him well the way to heaven. Better still, the work will thrive if he learns before he's 5. What is learned young is learned for life. What we hear at the first we remember to the last. The bent twig grows up a crooked tree. Horsebreakers say, the tricks a colt getteth at his first backing will, whilst he continueth, never be lacking. When a boy is rebellious, conquer him and do it well the first time, that there may be no need to do it again. A child's first lesson should be obedience, and after that you may teach it what you please. Yet the young mind must not be laced too tight, or you may hurt its growth and hinder its strength. They say a daft nurse makes a wise child, but I do not believe it. Nobody needs so much common sense as a mother or a governess. It does not do to be always thwarting, and yet remember, if you give a child his will and a whelp his fill, both will surely turn out ill. A child's back must be made to bend, but it must not be broken. He must be ruled, but not with a rod of iron. His spirit must be conquered, but not crushed. Nature does sometimes overcome nurture, but for the most part the teacher wins the day. Children are what they are made. The pity is that so many are spoiled in the bringing up. A child may be rocked too hard. You may spoil him either by too much cuffing or too much kissing. I knew 2 boys who had a Christian mother, but she always let them have their own way. The consequence was that when they grew up, they took to drinking and low company, and soon spent the fortune their father left them. Not one controlled them, and they had no control over themselves, and so they just rattled along the broad road like butcher boys, with runaway horses, and there was no stopping them. A birch or two worn out upon them when they were little would have been a good use of timber. Still, a child can be treated too hardly, and especially he can be shut up too many hours in school when a good run and a game of play would do him more good. Cows don't give any the more milk for being often milked, nor do children learn any more because of very long hours in a hot room. A boy can be driven to learn till he loses half his wits. Forced fruits have little flavour. A man at 5 is a fool at 15. If you make veal of the calf, he will never turn to beef. Yet learning may be left so long that the little dunce is always behindhand. There's a medium in everything, and he is a good father who hits upon it so that he governs his family with love, and his family loves to be governed by him. Some are like Eli, who let his sons sin, and only chided them a little. These will turn out to be cruel parents in the long run. Others are too strict and make home miserable, and so drive the youngsters to the wrong road in another way. Tight clothes are very apt to tear, and hard laws are often broken. But loose garments tear too, and where there are no laws at all, things are sure to go amiss. So you see, it is easy to err on either side, and hard to dance the tightrope of wisdom. Depend on it, he who has a wife and bairns will never be short of care to carry. See what we get when we come to marry, and yet many there are who will not tarry. In these days, children have a deal too much of their own way, and often make their mothers and fathers their slaves. It has come to a fine pass when the goslings teach the geese, and the kittens rule the cat. It is the upsetting of everything, and no parent ought to put up with it. It is as bad for the boys and girls as it is for the grown folk, and it brings out the worst side of their characters. I would sooner be a cat on hot bricks, or a toad under a harrow, than let my own children be my masters. No, the head must be the head, or it will hurt the body. For children out of place are a father's disgrace. If you rule not, you'll rue, for they'll quickly rule you.